first and absolutely foremost, posting the Chvod Achsanya. We always want to thank our hosts. And so, physically, we want to thank the Levinsons for this incredible tent matzav. I know that they really did it for us, but they also have Minyan here to justify it and to get some donations. And also to thank Emma, because I know Emma's been giving this year for a while, and it's a pleasure that we can get together and we can learn. And this is going to be fun. This should be exciting. Oh, I actually have source sheets. Oh, I don't have a source sheet to send to everyone online. I planned on that, and I apologize that I didn't do it. But in Mitzvah Shem, we'll get better and better as this goes on. All right, so Sarah's going to send it in. But first, we'll set the stage. We'll figure out what we're doing, why we're here, and you know who we are. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Rabbi Ari Zucker. It's my third year in the YU Torah Mitzion Kolo, and it's a pleasure to learn together. And just to, well, basically, we're going to introduce our limud in general, and then we're going to actually do the hakdam of our sefer Orchos Sadikim, who we'll learn more about in just a few minutes. But you know, there's a hakdam, there's an introduction, so we're going to cover that today, and then discuss what we'll be doing in subsequent weeks. So the first source actually isn't that important. It's not really necessary, and so I'm just going to sort of explain it outside while Sarah gets things organized. But the first source really is not from the Orchos Sadikim at all. The first source is the Gemara Maseches Yoma. And this source really is here to explain to you how we're thinking about this activity that we're doing, how we're thinking about our learning, and really why I'm here, what motivates me. This is one of my favorite Gemaras that I think about all the time. The Gemara Maseches Yoma basically says that we say Kriyat Shema twice a day. We say it in the morning, we say it at night, we actually say it at bed also. And we've said it all the time. You've said it hundreds, thousands, maybe even millions of times, probably thousands of times in your lives. And what in the world does it mean, Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha? What does it mean? So you could tell me that you're supposed to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does it mean to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And so the Gemara in Yuma says that it looks a little different. That's in source one. Abaye Amar Kedisanya. Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha. What does it mean that you're supposed to love Hashem, your God? Sheyehe Shem Shamayim Mis'ayv Al Yadecha. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be loved because of you. You should cause love to love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to engender through your actions. Sheyehe Korah V'Shoneh. When we shamash to make our coming, but hey, maso umasdo benakas imabrios. You should spend time with Tamidik HaKamim. Your actions should give nakas to other people and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ma'abrios almost alav. And if you were to do this properly, what are people going to say about you? At the end of the second line, Ashrei Aviv Shalamdo Torah, Ashrei Rabo Shalamdo Torah. Praiseworthy is this person's parents who taught them Torah. Praiseworthy is their teachers who taught them Torah. Similarly, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos talks about Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, who's described as Asher Yolato. So for those of us who aren't learning Torah from our fathers or from our rabbis, but all of the above encompass the goal of Talmud Torah is that we'll meet you, people spend time with you, they'd be like, oh, that person's amazing. She's awesome. My wife's not here, so I can embarrass her, which is always the best part of giving shirim. It's really why we do it. My wife is wonderful and sweet and warm, and the dentist office in the Five Towns love her. The dental hygienist, whenever Rebecca's coming, they're like, Rebecca's coming today. And they get so excited. Her parents will come, and they'll be like, when's Rebecca coming back? They get so excited to see her because she shines. She's incredible. She's so sweet. She's so warm. And our goal is to do that. At the end of this Gemara, we quote Pasuk from Yeshayahu. Alava kasu v'omer. You, my servant Israel, through you I am glorified. The goal of really our lives is that we should shine. We should cause people to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so amazing because you are so amazing. Because this person, this young woman's walking around, she's going to the bank, she's going to the supermarket, and she's awesome, and she's sweet, and she's kind, and she's thoughtful, and people are drawn to her. And if she's so great, then God must be so great. What we're saying every single day in Ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, when we're saying Kriyat Shema, we're really saying, we're reminding ourselves that our goal is to shine, is to glorify HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what we're going to do here. That's what we're going to be doing, God willing, tonight and in the upcoming weeks. We're going to learn how to shine. Because it's not so simple, it's not so easy. Because if it were, everyone would do it. And another thought on that, in our second source, we have another Mishnah in Perkei Avos, that were Rabbi Yeshua ben Parachia ben Itai Rebbeili Kibla b'hem, and they taught Rabbi Yeshua ben Parachia. Rabbi Yeshua ben Parachia tells us three things. You probably heard it before. Asei lecha rav. You should make for yourself a teacher. Ukdei lecha chaver, and you should buy friends. What does it mean to buy friends? Going on Starbucks dates is very expensive. Starbucks isn't cheap, but in order to hang out, for some reason, we always have to eat. And so, kenei lecha chaver. It's okay to spend money on your friendships. V'hem adonis kol adam lekavskos, and you should judge everyone favorably. But what if we understand this first statement a little differently? Because asei lecha rav, I'm getting hot even. This is great. I don't know what it was like for you. I think many of you were in an Israeli seminary experience not too long ago. And I went to the yeshiva in Netivari. Netivari is famous or infamous, depending on who you talk to, for Rav Aaron Bina. Rav Bina is the Rosh Yeshiva, but he's also really the Mashkiach, and he is constantly telling people how they can be better, the mistakes that they're making, and always pointing it out, whether they want to hear it or don't want to hear it. And so I have a very clear recollection over the 2 years that I spent there, times where I was davening apparently too intensely and not the right way, and it wasn't real enough, and so Rabina yelled at me. Times that I did this wrong and that wrong, Rabina was always giving me feedback, always telling me how I could be better, how I could improve myself and become a better Jew, a better person. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, that's what rabbis do. Rabbis are always giving you feedback on what you're supposed to do. And then my life continued, and I had a lot of rebbeim, and they were wonderful. But you don't really find someone who's constantly looking at you, constantly trying to tell you how you can be better. Rav Victor Miller, I heard this from my Rebbe, Rav Avram Tzarfati. Rav Victor Miller was a mashkiach in a yeshiva, and he wondered why there are so many yeshiva brachrim, and none of them ever walked up to him and said, Rebbe, I want to be better. Tell me what I should be doing to be better. We don't have someone watching over us who's literally a mashkiach, literally watching over, saying, you know, the tone you used with your mother yesterday really wasn't so good. You could try and be a little bit more patient. Or, you know, you did well, but you didn't do so well. No one's telling us what we're supposed to do. But if I want to shine, if I'm trying to be that Asher Bacha Aspire, then how do I do it? So I wonder, on a very, very drash level, this is not pshat, it's not the best translation, but I wonder if this line of Asei Lecha Rav is not just saying that you should find a teacher for yourself, but in the wake, in the chasm of teachers, we don't have teachers always, especially if we're stuck in Chicago and our teachers are in New York or wherever. Maybe, Asei Lecha Rav, you should make yourself into a teacher. Find yourself, make yourself into someone who can teach. But if I want to be someone who can teach, I need to know what I'm talking about. And that leads us into our Sefer. That leads us into the Orchos Tzadikim. Now, the Orchos Tzadikim is a classic Musar Sefer. It's been around forever since the 14th century, the 1400s. What's fun about it is that no one knows who authored it. There's no name inside. No one knows where it came from. There's actually speculation that it might have been written by a woman. I have no clue if that's true. There's been discussion back and forth about it. The McGill student doesn't think so, but that's his opinion. But the reason why we're learning this Sefer is because this Sefer really gives you a survey of how God thinks about Midos and how Chazal think about Midos. We're quoting Psukim. We're going to quote Maamar Chazal. And we're going to be able to appreciate, how does each of these Midos work? Because there are a lot of Midos out there. There's a lot of things I'm supposed to be doing. Is now the time to be like a little bit more stern? Is now the time to be a little bit more laid back? Should I be loud right now? Should I be soft? Should I be pushy? What am I supposed to do in each and every one of these situations? And Rav Volbi, in his Al HaShor, says that the goal of Musar is to know how you're supposed to act in each and every situation. And that's what we're going to try and do. That's what we're going to aim toward. The other thing that I'll point out, we're going to see it in a few minutes. All right. But we call this Sefer Orchos Tzadikim. It probably wasn't called Orchos Tzadikim by the author. The author seemingly is not such a Balgaiva, is very, very, very humble to the extent that he or she didn't even feel it was necessary to put their name in the Sefer. And so a name as ostentatious as Orchos Tzadikim, the path of the righteous, might actually not have fit with the personality that we're learning from. And if you look, we'll see it in our source packet, that there's going to be an excerpt where the Orchos Tzadikim literally says that this Sefer is called Sefer HaMidos. This is the book of character traits. And in all likelihood, it was published as Sefer HaMidos. But Orchos Tzadikim is like a much more exciting title. If you can think about it for a moment, Orkos Tzadikim sounds a lot like Mesias Yesharim. Orkos Tzadikim means the path of the righteous. What does Mesias Yesharim mean? Path of the just. It's basically the same idea. It fit into that general framework of Musar Svarim. But that's who we're talking about. That's where we're going, and now we're going to jump in. And the way that I was thinking about setting this up, we can discuss a different option. You'll let us know. But the way that I was thinking about setting it up is that this sefer is, it's not so long, but it's not, also not so short. And if we want, we're not going to just, you know, read every line in every page. It's not going to make any sense. It'll take a very long time. And what might be more fruitful is that we're just going to see highlights of every parak. And so that's what we're doing here. We're going to see highlights of the Hakdama. If anyone's interested in learning it either before or after, you can learn beforehand and send in comments, thoughts, questions, and that will be gavaldic. You could learn it afterward with sort of an insight that we've shared together. And you'd have that option. What I have here, the paragraphs that are delineated, are based off of Sefaria. Sefaria's got an English and Hebrew translation. Got English and Hebrew on there. And if you want to, you can. Otherwise, there's plenty of Sefarim ways to get it. There's Feldheim, and you can get the Hebrew versions. Feldheim's naturally like twice as expensive, but you'll make that decision on your own. Now we're actually going to start learning the Sefer after, that's not so long, brief introduction. Our goal, why are we doing this in the first place? Because we want to shine. We want to figure out what our Midos should look like, and we really need to be the ones who are going to guide ourselves. We're going to figure out how we can develop that glow, because it's not so clear that someone's just going to do it for us. And so we open up at the bottom of our first page, the very, very first line, quoting Shlomo HaMelech in Sefer Koheles. Sof davar hakol nishma, es ha'elokim yarei v'es musosav shamor, ki zeh kol ha'adam. What's the very first thing we need to know about this Sefer? What's the very first thing we need to know? If we're going to work on ourselves and become better? Yiras Shamayim. You need to for your Kadosh Baruch Hu. You need to have that Yiras Hashem. And ultimately, he points out, we'll discuss this a little bit more, but ultimately he says that Hakol Nishma, everything that's been done, everything you're going to do, everything that's been done, it's all happened before. There's nothing new under the sun. It's another line from Koheles. And he says, recognize your place. You're not getting past anyone. You're not getting past anything. You are just another person in this world, and someone's paying attention. Someone cares about what you're doing. You matter. And he brings in a bunch of other psukim about how important Yiras Shamayim is. And the last one we're likely familiar with, that we say every Friday night, Isha Yiras Hashem, Hi Tis Halal, that the most praiseworthy kind of woman is a woman with Yiras Shamayim. And with that, we're going to transition into the later parts of the Sefer, of the Hakdama, and we'll get back to Yiras Shamayim toward the end, but we just got started and we can't get too intense into Yiras Shamayim too quickly. And so, we start with a story from Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky. And we know who he is. He's written like 80 books. He's like a master psychologist, big rabbi from Milwaukee. He's related to all the Twerskys we know and love here in Chicago. And how do you make a Rabbi Dr. Twersky? How do you get an Abraham J. Twersky, who's a little kid, to turn into the incredible Rabbi Dr. Twersky that we know? Probably starts with the way his father talked to him. Because he tells a story about one Rosh Hashanah, he was playing chess, which is something you're not supposed to do. You know, it's not the best use of your time. And so his father calls him into his study, and he says, I hear you're playing chess. Little Abraham, probably Avraham, little Avraham, you know, he looks down, he's like a little bit embarrassed, and he's like, yeah, I was playing chess. And his father says, it's Rosh Hashanah. He says, I know it's Rosh Hashanah. Then his father said something that, remember, write this down, because this is the line you're going to use when you talk to your children. This is the line that everyone should use. Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky's father told him, you're better than that. You're better than that. He didn't tell him, how can you do that? He didn't yell at him. He always told him, you are better than that. That's unbecoming of you. Effectively, you're a prince. You're a Ben Melech. You're a son of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You're better than that. And that's what this paragraph is about to tell us. That you're a princess. Your actions matter because you're someone special. We jump in on the top of page 2. Mipnei she'anu roin es adam shehu mifkar habruin asher bara hakel ba'olam hatachton ki hu mesukan b'tzelem elokim u b'tzuraso. We see that human beings were created. They're the choicest, the best of all creations. That he's got this image of a Kadosh Baruch Hu built into him. And he's got a neshama. God clearly cares about mankind. It's the pinnacle of creation. Quite literally, the last thing that was created was us, was human beings. From here we see that we are the highest form of creation. We're the goal of creation. God made this whole world for us. And if that's not enough of a reason to feel like a princess, to feel like I'm special, I don't know what is. Everything that exists in this world really is for our purpose, our benefit. It's for us. It's for us to be better. It's for us to learn. And what we're going to do throughout the learning of the Sefer is that we're going to look around the world and see how the world operates. We're going to have a few mashalim built into this hakdama, that the way the world operates is going to teach us how we're supposed to be the best, how we're supposed to really reach that pinnacle of creation. Right, we'll tell one more story. Do we mind stories? I know that Emma's very textual. Yeah, she tells stories.
No,
I like stories. So, to what extent are we really, really the pinnacle of creation? Because you could argue that there's actually, we're not the pinnacle. We're good. We're the last step. But there might be one step above us before you get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. You could say angels. Angels are more impressive than we are. So Reb Leibel Eger, there are a few amazing Reb Leibel Eger stories. I told my wife I was telling one. She's like, you got to tell me which one. Like, there's a bunch. So Reb Leibel Eger, he's the grandson of Rabbi Akiva Eger. And Rabbi Akiva Eger was the Gadol HaDor, and he was the Misnaget par excellence. He was into straight halakha. He didn't get into any of this Hasidus stuff. He was an enemy of Hasidus. But for whatever reason, Reb Leibel Eger, his grandson, gets interested and he spends time in Kutsk. Kutsk was very intense Hasidus, the Kutsk Rebbe. And Reb Leibel Eger's in Kutsk, and he's there for a year, and he comes back, and I don't think it was his grandfather, but it was like the Chevra in Posen, the Chevra, wherever they were at the time, was talking to Reb Leibel Eger, and they're like, no, what'd you learn with all the Hasidim? And they're a little pejorative, they're not so impressed, they don't imagine that Reb Leibel could have learned anything of value. And so he says, I learned three things. Three things. A whole year, he learned three things. Thing number one, God created man, and God created angels. And a man is not an angel, and an angel is not a man. That's number one. A whole year. Number two, that angels are greater than men. That's number two. That's all we learn. Number three, that man has the capacity to be even greater than an angel. The function of a human being in this world is that we have the ability to be great, to be incredible. We were created as the top of creation, and we can be the top of creation if we're willing to put in the effort to try. And that's what we're trying to get to. We're pointing out in Orchos Tzadikim. I'll just share one thing that's, I guess, a little bit more Kabbalistic, although not so Kabbalistic. What do we call the sky? You go up, 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 and up, up, up. It's called Shemayim. What do we call down here? We call it Aretz. So, what's happening? What does Shemayim mean? Language of Sham. It's there. It's way up there. You know the whole thing that you have in Shemayim Esrei, you have your feet together because you're supposed to be like an angel because angels only have one leg? Why do we know that angels only have one leg, and why do they only have one leg? Because angels live in Shemayim. They live Sham. And in Shemayim, you're just there and you're stagnant. You don't go anywhere. You might be all the way up. You might be up in Shemayim, but you're never going to change. You're never going to grow. Human beings, when we're talking to Kadosh Baruch Hu, in this moment, we're like an angel. But generally, we're not like that. Generally, we are on the aretz. Aretz in language of ritza, of rats. You're running. We have two legs that help us propel forward because we are designed not like angels. We're supposed to be greater than angels. We have the capacity to be greater than angels because we can move. And that's our first excerpt, second excerpt. On the bottom of page 2. V'aljokam elu v'aladeos kigo... V'aljokam elu v'shahardeos... I cut it off in Hebrew. It doesn't fit well in Hebrew. Basically, we've got lots and lots of midos. There are tons of midos out there. Kigo, for example, muhulav onen, v'tzarayin v'unadiv, and you'll have someone, you know, who's very, very happy, and someone who's, you know, not always so happy, a little bit sorrowful, a little bit sad. You'll have someone who's stingy, you'll have someone who's generous. You'll have an Akza, you'll have a Rachamon, you'll have someone who's insensitive, you'll have someone who's very sensitive and compassionate. Rach Levav, Amit Slave, someone who is like lets things go, someone who's very stubborn. Kol Kayetzbehen, you'll have the whole litany of options. The Kol Deos, i.e. or Midos, all of these different ideas, all of these different Deos. Yeshben, Shahayul Adam, Mitzchilas Priyaso, Lufi Tavakufa, Yeshben, Deos, Shetavu, Shal Adam, Ze, some of these midos are just born into us. Some people you meet, she's just so nice. Like, she's always been nice. There's nothing changing about her. Unfortunately, last week I was at the Shiva for Ruti Sova. Is that Sal? She's a 2-year-old girl. She didn't grow up. She like barely had a life. But even from 2 years old, where her parents couldn't really teach her very much, everyone said that she was just like a sweet girl, and everyone was drawn to her. She had tons of little friends at two. And sometimes it's just born into you. Who you are is just sweet. And sometimes you'll have people, allegedly, I'm told I was like this. I was just a very unhappy kid. I was like, never smiled. It was like terrible. I got a shirt growing up, and I didn't realize what it meant until I was much older, that I'm only wearing black until they make something darker. Because apparently I was very negative. I'm probably still very negative, but I hide it better. And some people are just born that way. They're born, they've got innate midos. Lotov l'ra. But for some people, it's not born into them, but they develop it. Over the course of their lives, they grow into mida X, Y, or Z. V'yesh, right in the middle of the paragraph, V'yesh she'enem l'adam b'tchilas b'riyaso. So for some people, there's no inkling. It's not a part of who they are at all. Some people are never born generous at all. Some people are not born to smile. Some people are not born to be stubborn. But you learn them later on as you go. You know you have like friends who are like super sweet and like a shtickle naive, and like people like on the subway will like ask them for help. Or, you know, hey, you have some change, and like they're gonna buy alcohol, they're gonna buy drugs with them, but they're like, oh yeah, sure. Like, you need $10 to get onto the bus? Sure, I'm happy to give it to you. Some people are just so sweet, and they're just willing to accept it. I don't know if you guys experienced this. Apparently, my grandmother-in-law, Safta Anna, she got an email from someone saying that they really needed money, and she's like ready to send it over and just couldn't figure out how. So she called my mother-in-law and said, how do I send this money? My cousin really needs help. And my mother-in-law was like, no, like, that's a fake email. Like, you're getting spam. Like, that's not a good thing. You shouldn't be doing this. Like, some people are just very trusting. You have to develop that over time. And through Achim, through other people, you'll eventually get there. End of the third line. Az Shapona Libo, Me'asmo Lefim Makshava And eventually you learn, eventually you grow up. It doesn't matter, every year I'm in, no matter what age I'm in, I always think I'm smart, and then next year I realize I'm not as smart as I thought I was. And you start acting that way. Sometimes you've got midos that you should use often. You should smile a lot. It's good to smile. Some midos you shouldn't necessarily use all the time. You know, the stubborn mida might be something of value, but you don't want to use it all the time. And this isn't just something that we talk about in midos. We see it with our gedolim. We see it with the rabbis. If I were to ask you to describe Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, do we know Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach? He was always, always smiling. He never stopped smiling. Now, he'll tell you that wasn't innate, and we'll talk about that as the time goes on, but he was always smiling. In stark contrast, Rav Baruch Ber, who was this tremendous giant in Talmud, he had what was called an angry hat. If he was in a bad mood, he didn't want anyone talking to him, he would put on a special hat, and everyone knew, don't talk to Rav Baruch Ber right now. You would have never seen an angry hat on Rav Shlomo Zalman. It just wasn't part of him. And there's a ton of examples, but if we're thinking about any of our favorite Rebbetzins, you think about Rebbetzin Kanievsky. Have you read the Rebbetzin Kanievsky biography? It's good stuff. She's incredible. Does anyone know Rebbetzin Schachter? Rav Hershel Schachter's wife? Rebbetzin Kanievsky, like, her whole life was to make sure her husband was able to learn. Like, she did anything and everything she could. And she was soft-spoken, and she was sweet, and she was always behind the scenes. The epitome of tznius. Rebbetzin Schachter, God forbid, is all of those things also. Tzanua, and cares about her husband. She makes sure everything's okay. Every Zoom Rav Schachter's been on in the past 8 months, Rebbetzin Schachter starts it out, and she makes sure it's all set up, and then her husband sits down. Rebbetzin Schechter is also very outspoken. She is not shy at all. Somebody, one of the Talmidim in YU once asked her, Rebbetzin, what's it like to be married to the Gadol HaDor? And she's like, I don't know. You should ask my husband. She's not shy. She's never shy. I don't know if you remember this. Like, this might have been before your time, but when the whole girls wearing tefillin thing was happening, for Purim that year, she decided it would be fun to dress up like someone wearing tefillin. So she's at the Purim Chagiga wearing a talis, a fake talis, and fake tefillin. It was great. So you have all these different midos, and we know that everyone's got their innate midos, but what am I supposed to do with that? Like, what's the right mida? I have a very clear recollection of my chavrusa and I going into Rabina's office when we were in our second year, and we're basically like, Rebbe, what do you want from us? What's the goal? What should I look like when I come out? 5 years, 10 years from now? What's an ideal Nativ Aryeh alumnus? And obviously get a super annoying answer. He goes, there isn't one. So you're not supposed to like be more this or more that. You're supposed to be you. And that's just Rabina's Lushitaso. I was like, just give me something. And so his number one rule, my number one goal really, was that all of his students should be very from Balabatan, who make money, who work hard, who go to shul, daven in the minyan 3 times a day, and give daf yomi. And so I can tell you, at the very least, that Rabbi Gelman is a Nativ Aryeh alumnus, and I'm pretty sure he davens in the minyan 3 times a day. He does give daf yomi. I don't know, he's not such a balabas, but Yoel Goldberg in Kins, Nativ Aryeh alumnus, and he's literally the dream. He's the poster child. In general, Yoel Goldberg's the man. But daf yomi, balabas, the whole thing. But there's not really one meeting. Everyone has their own inclinations, their own circumstances, and so even though I might appreciate that there are all these different kinds of migos, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to find mine. And that's what he gets to in the next paragraph on the top of page 3. It says, V'zeh doma la'osa tavshim. Basically, our migos are kind of like making soup. And if we were trying to figure out if a man or woman wrote this, especially in the 14th century, the chances of 14th century men knowing anything about soup is like a little bit of a stretch. So it really might be a woman. I don't know. But what makes someone a great cook? Let's just think about this for a second. We're in the Levinson tent. We obviously know that Michelle Levinson's a wonderful cook, but what makes someone good? It's not just the recipes that they have, because I can have the same recipe as you have, and I might do a terrible job, you might do a great job. It's like the Tershma, I'll pair the recipe, and it's knowing, like, some great chefs, like great cooks, aren't using recipes the same way. They know the ingredients are supposed to go in, but they know you don't do too much of this, and you do a little bit of that, and there's a lot of eyeballing. When you first start cooking, it's a lot of measuring cups. It takes a very, very long time. We don't have the right ingredient. What are you supposed to substitute? And basically, we say that being a Baal Midos is like being a great chef. Because when you're making a soup, you need all those things. You need vegetables, you need meat, and you need water, and you need spices, you need salt and pepper. Everything needs the special amount. You need a lot of this and a little bit of that. If you put in not enough water, you put in not enough meat, it's not going to taste good. You put in too much salt, it's going to be disastrous. And for all of them, if you put in too much of some things and not enough of others, you're not going to have a good meal. About Habaki, the expert, a great cook, the good cook's going to know how much to make. Then it'll be delicious. Then it'll be great. Everyone's going to want to come over on Shabbos to eat your food. And just like midos, there are certain midos. Everyone should be humble. There's no question. You want to have a lot of humility. You want to be bashful. You want to be easily embarrassed. And there's some you don't want to have a lot. You don't want to be super super egotistical. You don't want to be really hard and difficult. And you definitely don't want to be insensitive. And so you want to be a person that's always weighing their midos. This good, is it not good? And that's how we're really going to arrive at where we want to be, to know how we're supposed to act. And the Gemara in Gittin, we talk about this around Tisha B'Av time, talks about the Anvanuso shall. What was it? Akavi Ben Mahalo. Kaveh Be'Mehal because of his Anvenusa, because of his Anivus, which we just said is really good. Kara Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So the specific circumstances that he was such an Anav, he was the Gadol Ador, he was like the head Kohen, who should have decided, should we bring this Karban, should we not bring a Karban? And he ended up saying, I can't make a decision, I don't know what to do. And because he didn't make a decision, Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So even certain midos that are not good, that we don't have a lot of, we have to have a little bit of. At least most Ashkenazim like can't handle a lot of spices. But if you don't have like a little bit of spice and they're chilling sometimes, it's not so good. So we want to try and balance it out. Okay. But he points out, and I think we're actually not going to read this piece inside, but he points out in our source 7 on bottom of page 3, you have to know what you're looking for. Because, and this is really what we discussed, why we're here, some of us might want, you want to be a tzaddikus, you want to be doing a good job, you want to be an Oved Hashem, but I don't know what I'm supposed to look like. I don't know what that looks like. And he says, it's like Shimon, we know Shimon's somewhere in the city, and Reuven's looking all over for Shimon, except Reuven doesn't know what Shimon looks like. So you might know that he's somewhere in Chicago, but that doesn't help me if I don't know what he looks like. And so what we're doing in our Sefer is we're trying to understand, what does this meat actually look like? When is this called anivus? When is this called being lazy? When is this called ego? When is this called standing up for what's right? And that's what we're going to try and figure out. And now we get to the fourth page, keeping the main thing the main thing. We talked about a few midos. We're going to talk about it. We got 28 chapters or 27 chapters, I guess, talking about all the different midos that we're going to try and develop within ourselves appropriately to the right measurement, the right amount. But what's that ultimate one midah that's the most important? Yiras Shemayim. On the top of page 4, V'in Shum Maisa Nechshav Bilti Hayira HaTahora. The only midah that really matters is Yira, because if I do any of these things but there's no Yiras Shemayim involved, it's going to be useless. Lachen Yish Lodia Lakol Ki Kol Ish Harotza Lahavi Navsho Lide Midos HaTovos Tzarek La'ayir Yiras Shemayim In Kol Midah B'Midah. You always need to have Yiras Shemayim in every one of your midos, or it's going to fall apart. It's not going to be worthwhile. He gives a beautiful mashal here. Ki Yiras Hashem Ki Kesher HaMakzeches Kol HaMidos. It ties together all the midos. Vidoma Lachut Sheikh Nisu Lesok Kori HaMargalios. You got all these gems, all your beautiful midos, and Yiras Shemayim is like the string, the necklace that ties it all together, so you can actually wear the necklace. Nekashu Ksharim Betaktiso Lahaksi Kol HaMargalios. Ain Suffik Ki Behenasek HaKesher. If the Kesher falls away, if the necklace string falls apart, all your jewels fell off. Yiblu Kol HaMargalios Kaka Yira He ha magzekas kol hamidos. Vim tatu kesher yira, yibadu mimka kol hamidos atobos. If you lose your Yiras Shemayim, then you're a mess. And so what does it mean to lose my Yiras Shemayim? How do I make sure I don't lose that Yiras Shemayim? First of all, get through the first 27 chapters, and you'll get to 28, and 28 is about Yiras Shemayim. But more than that, let's look at a Gemara in Brachos that talks about this. Because the Gemara in Brachos basically says, what happens? You got someone who's really tempted to sin. They want to sin so badly, they're just dying to put on that dress that's made of wool and linen, and Shanaz is such a difficult nisayon for us, what are we going to do? Gemara tells us, Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Rav Lakish says, Le'olam yargiz adam yetzer tov al yetzer hara. Your yetzer tov should always be winning, but how do you make sure your yetzer hatov wins? The pasuk says, Rigzu v'yatech hatav. And this is a pasuk we say in Kriya Shema, that you should tremble. You should tremble, you shouldn't sin. Yimnitzku mutav, and if that's effective, just by reciting this pasuk, great. Vimlav yasuk b'torah. If that's not working and you're still tempted, you should learn Torah. What if that doesn't work? Yimnitzku mutav. If not, then kara kriyashma. You should say kriyashma. Vimlav. If that doesn't work either, then at the very end of the line, yisker lo yom hamisa. Remember that one day you're going to die. Now, admittedly, if I'm tempted to sin and I'm going to remember that one day I'm going to die, most sins that we're going to commit are very ephemeral, they're tangible, they're just momentary, and if I remember that I'm not going to live forever, then I can appreciate that, yeah, it's probably going to help, remembering that I'm not going to be here nonstop. But what if it's a little different? I spent 5 years working for NCSY, and I'm a shtickle obsessed with Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. Are we familiar with Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan? Okay, all right, that's fine. We're going to get to know him tonight. Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan was on the who's who's list of physicists. When he was like 30, he was like the bomb in physics. He also decided to be a rabbi in like Louisville or somewhere like super random. And eventually he became the director. Huh?
Was he
So one of the things Rabbi Kaplan did is that he translated a ton of stuff. The Purple Living Torah Chumash is all his translation. He's gotten commentaries, he's got quotes, he paraphrased and taught tons and tons of Sfarim, a lot of them Kabbalistic in nature. He did write the translation that Feldheim uses for Derech Hashem. See, he's got a book called If You Were God. We're not going to go through the whole book right now, but he's got the middle chapter is what we're going to appreciate for a few minutes. Basically, Rabbi Ari Kaplan says, what happens when we die? We're talking about Yom HaMisa. What does it mean to remind somebody of Yom HaMisa? Well, let's think about what happens when someone passes away. If I were to ask you, Talia, I think you've heard this. Apologies. If you think about it, how much of our brains do we really use? You ever heard, like, oh, we only use 10% of our brains? So, I actually did study neuroscience in a psychology major, and we use most of our brains, like 70-ish percent at least, but we're not actively using it for thinking. Our brains do different things. Part of my brain is telling me to move my hands, part of my brain is telling me to, you know, to stand still, and part of my brain is telling my heart that it should keep beating. So some of it is active, some of it is passive. Part of what my brain is doing is also blocking out other things. Right now, there's air blowing that I'm not really paying attention to. I'm really focusing on what's in front of me. And there's lights that are around me. My peripheral vision is much stronger than I realize, because my brain is basically blocking things out so I can really focus. The goal of our lives is that we shouldn't be inundated with information. We want to be able to focus. The reason why we forget things is because our brains are actively trying to forget them. If you were constantly remembering everything, then they'd make TV shows about you, about this like whiz kid who knows everything but can't function. We call it autism. That's like one of the features of somebody with autism, that they have too much information overload. That's what we call that they'll need a stimulation in some other ways because they need to just calm down. That's what our brain is doing. And someone who has some sort of diagnosis, it is not able to do that as well. What happens at the end of my life? God willing, after 120 years, I pass away, surrounded by family. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And now my brain is no longer working. My brain's no longer filtering out things because there's no brain anymore. I'm just a neshama. But my neshama is experiencing everything my body did, but there's no brain to filter out memories. There's no brain to filter out sounds, sensations, sights. And so my neshama is exposed to everything. What happens when your neshama is exposed to everything? You remember your entire life. You ever heard the movie mashal at the end of your life? That when you die, there's a movie? All right, we've heard it. Well, I will play it up for a minute just for fun. When you pass away, the way Rabbi Kaplan explains it, this is how a lot of people have heard it, our brains are no longer knocking things out. And so even though it doesn't happen exactly like this, the way we can appreciate is that it's almost like watching a movie of your life. You're sitting there and your loved ones are surrounding you and you're watching for the time you're born all the way until you die, all of the wonderful things that you've accomplished and all of the not so wonderful things that you've accomplished. The time in 10th grade where you called the girl a name and it stuck with her for years and years and years. The time you cheated on a test. The time that you... whatever. We don't have to get into all the details of my high school experience. Ultimately, though, that the movie mashal, what Rabbi Kaplan explains about the way our brains are functioning, ultimately what that means is that at the end of your life, you see everything. You see your entire existence. And not just through... And you don't just see your existence, but you see it through a lens that we might not always see in this world. Because in this world, maybe we see a Kadosh Baruch Hu, maybe we don't. But in the next world, where nothing's blocking us, we see a Kadosh Baruch Hu clearly. We know what's good and what's not good. We know what's right and what's wrong. And we look at that movie with a different kind of lens. We look at that movie of my life, and I'm able to say, I kind of messed up a little bit. And if I only messed up a little bit, and there's a lot of good and a little bit of bad, then what do we call that experience? What do we call watching that movie or the lifetime that will ensue of just knowing what my life looked like? We call that heaven. That is a heavenly, that's a wonderful experience. You just get to live with the nachas, the pride that I did a good job. That feeling of accomplishment, there's nothing better. There's nothing better that you'll feel in this world than accomplishment. And if, God forbid, someone didn't live well, now I can look at the screen instead of anyone here, just because it's easier, I'm not making eye contact with anyone. If you, God forbid, didn't live so well, then the agony of watching yourself mess up over and over again is really painful. on numerous places, Chazal tell us that the fire of hell is basically just shame. It's the shame that I didn't do a good job. And so when we talk about this, Gemara tells us, "Rigs of al tekatel," you know, when you're approaching sin and you're trying to figure out what do I do to stop myself, to remind yourself of the day of death, but not, oh, that one day you're going to die, but remind yourself that you're going to have to do a din v'cheshbon. You're going to have to look back at your life, and at the end of 120 years, is this action worth it? Is it worth doing this right now? Are you going to look back at this and be proud of yourself, or God forbid, the opposite? And what's so interesting is that if you look at the Gemara, what pasuk does the Gemara quote? Rigs of Yal Tekhatel. Where else do we see that pasuk? In Kriyat Shema. What if instead of only thinking about this pasuk at the end of my life, I can think about it every single night when I say Kriyat Shema? What if really the goal, the reason why Yirat Shemayim is so important, is because this is this perspective, this understanding that I'm not going to live forever, that Rigs of Yal Tekhatel, Imer Vavka, Abishkav Kamsela, that the pasuk I say before during Kriyat Shema Shalamita, this pasuk is reminding me that I'm not going to live forever. I'm always going to have to do this. Every single night, effectively, we're thinking about this day of death. Every single night, we're weighing our actions. Every single night, we're trying to figure out, how am I supposed to operate in this world? That thought changed my life, because it really gave me a perspective on any time I was confronted with a decision, how should I act? And it drove me for that goal that we discussed in the very beginning, that we want to shine. We want God to be glorified through us. We want to recognize that we're special and that we should act in a special manner. And I guess we'll close with something on the last page. It is the last page, right? Yeah. This is the last paragraph of the Hakdama, where the Machaber, the author, tells us that this is a Sefer Amidos. That's what I mentioned, that this is Orchot Tzedikim, is probably not the title. It's probably Sefer Amidos. This is Sefer Amidos, v'hu nikhtav v'nikhtam b'tabas ha'chachma l'lamid l'adam das. This was put in to teach people how they should act. Lios ha'sefer hazeh b'yidei kol ish l'kli umnos. This is supposed to be a tool for you to use to try and figure out how you're supposed to act. L'taken misoko midosav umasav, to improve yourself. And then this is beautiful, this is very Pizestner-like. He says, now my child, take this mashal, take all the things that we've taught you and run with it. Basically, be the best version of yourself. You should weigh and you should balance a scale of wisdom. You should look at all these midos to figure out, how do I want to do more of this or less of that? And it took a while, but modern psychology caught up. If you were to ask modern psychologists how to, the most authoritative personality descriptors, there's a lot of things that people will say, but the most authoritative approach is what we see at the bottom of this. It's the big five personality traits. I didn't realize that they spelled out ocean when I was studying for this in college. It would have been very helpful to know they spell out ocean, but I remember them nonetheless. And the idea of the big five personality traits is very similar to what we've been discussing. It's not just this idea from the Orchot Tzedikim, but something that psychologists talk about. That everyone has midos, and they really exist on a spectrum. And this is what's going to guide the rest of our learning through the Sefer. They exist on a spectrum. So if in the context of the personality traits, we've got five personalities. We've got openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. And it's not to say that one of these is good and one of them is bad. But if you're more open, then you're going to be more curious. You're going to be going out more often. But if you're lower in openness, then that's not necessarily a bad thing. It might mean that you're more practical. The people who are very creative and the people who are very practical usually aren't the same people. You've got the people who have like their heads in the clouds with awesome, amazing ideas, than the people who actually can get the ideas done. And we're not going to go through all of them, but I'll just point out that if someone who's agreeable, we might say, oh, agreeableness, that's a great midah. I want to be super agreeable. If you're super agreeable, someone can take advantage of you. If you're super agreeable, you're not going to be able to give good feedback, because you're not going to see the inverse. One of the best things a friend can do for another friend is to give feedback and let them know that you could be better. And so every single one of these, the way that we understand it in psychology, is that it's all seesaw, it's all scale, and some people are more this, some people are more that, and what we're going to try and figure out is that all these midos exist, whether it's anav and gaiva, whether it's being sweet, whether it's being harsh. We're going to try and look at all these, and we're going to look at them on this scale and figure out what's the right measure. And so going forward in the Sefer, we're not going to do one chapter, we're going to do two chapters every week, Yimitz Hashem. Next week's going to be anav and gaiva. That's easy, that's an obvious one. We're going to look at humility and ego and where those balance out. I'll give you a hint. there's supposed to be a lot, a very little ego and a lot of anava, but that's not always going to be the case. And so we're always going to do two chapters. You're welcome to look at them beforehand. And we're going to look at these two chapters and try and figure out, what is that balance supposed to look like? How should I be acting? So I guess we'll just wrap up. Yeah, I think we're good. Just to wrap up what we did. First, we talked about our goal, that we want to shine. We want God to be glorified through us. And that's really my goal. That's hopefully our goal in this limud. And it's a limud that we need to take on ourselves, because no one necessarily is going to tell us what to do. We have to develop this understanding of how midos work all on our own. And then we went through a few of the different things in the Hakdama. The first and foremost, Yiras Hashem matters, and we discussed that Yiras Hashem, part of that is what happens when we're no longer in this world, and we're going to have to answer for the way we acted. And we have to appreciate that we're special, that we're a Ben Melech, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu put us in this world for a reason, and that we have the potential to be incredible, to be great, to be greater than angels. Like, and we learned the amazing parenting lesson from Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky's father, that you're better than that. And that everyone's got different midos, so we're going to try and weigh those out. And I think brings an end to our learning tonight. Thank you so much for learning with me tonight, and I look forward to next time. You guys should check out the tent. It's really nice here. Okay. Have a good night. And questions, comments, observations,